The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance.
BTL, coming at you.
Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Matthew, how you doing?
I'd be better if I put the microphone up to where I could speak into it. I am doing good. Looking forward to Winner's Week continuing. Micah Frazier. Really good interview with him yesterday.
Yeah.
I kind of was thinking about it afterwards on the way home, and man, there's a couple little gems in there about how he fishes that Ned rig and kind of his mentality. One of the key things that I thought he said, which you don't really think about these guys having self-doubt. and so there's three things that have happened to me with these professional anglers on a high level over the past month that has made me go, huh, that's interesting. The first is, at a media event, Brent Ayler saying that he has zero confidence on rivers, hates fishing rivers, and has no idea where to start or fish on rivers. That he just doesn't get it. And I'm like, dude, you're Brent Ayler. How does that... But it gave me confidence then, because I'm kind of the same way, right?
Yeah.
If Brent Ayler can feel that way, well, so can we. I just thought they all do that, you know? The second one was Brian Thrift saying that everyone but him thought he would eventually win an FLW Cup. I mean, dude, you're Brian Thrift. How do you not think you're eventually going to win an FLW Cup? And then the last one was Micah Frazier yesterday talking about how he didn't know if he could ever win one, that it was all kind of this make-believe fantasy world until it actually happened.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Confidence is everything. You know, and what you're building up to and what you're trying to accomplish, even the great ones. It's interesting to hear, no matter what sport it is, it's interesting to hear guys that are either way over the edge from a confidence standpoint, or guys that you know are badass and just at the top of the game, just kind of aw shucks it. You know? So it's what some guys do, man. It's how they roll.
I think Jamie's pretty confident guy who we're having on today. Hartman, though.
Yeah.
We'll have to ask him about, you know.
Well, his confidence has to be sky high. Good grief. Two out of the last three.
Two out of three. And remember, he came last year. I mean, the most overused term in fishing, the hammer. But it fits him because he had six top 12s 2 years ago on the Elite Series his rookie season. Obviously missed most of last year with the back injury. But, yeah. I mean, the guy has 30-plus top 10 finishes in FLW competition, seven wins at the BFL level, and now two Elite Series wins to go along with that.
You know, there's a bowling ball called
the hammer. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I did know that.
Been around a long time. All right, so good show today. We're going to have Jamie on here in about 10, 15 minutes. I want to let everybody know, tomorrow, Scott Canterbury, the current leader of the Angler of the Year race on the Elite Series, going to be on the show. And then we have two shows booked next week. A holiday on Monday, so we're not going to have a show on Monday. Tuesday, we have made arrangements with Edwin Evers. He's going to be on the show live in Tulsa with Matthew, and then I'm going to be back in studio. We will have more on that show coming, but Edwin Evers is going to be live on Tuesday next week to talk about just his magnificent year on the BPT. And then on Wednesday, a special treat, we're going to have Boyd Duckett on post Red Crest to kind of give us his thoughts on the season, on the Red Crest, and what may be coming down the pipes from an MLF perspective. One thing I was going to mention yesterday, Matt, that I forgot, you know, on the final day of the Red Crest, it was interesting because during the prime viewing, even though it was a blowout, but during the prime viewing online, you know what was on cable or dish or whatever, direct?
MLF.
Yeah. And it was like day one of one of the cups from this year. It was a 2019 event. So
it's all about
some overlap there.
It's all about the logos on the jersey being seen by eyeballs.
Yeah.
Subconsciously or consciously, engaged, unengaged, the more eyeballs that see those logos,
yeah, That was massive overload. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I mean, I have not been getting a whole lot of sleep here lately with all the construction that's going on in the house. Mm-hmm. Things are a mess.
You have no carpet. You have a little bit of tile
it's
finally.
It's freaking everywhere. I mean,
what
it's just a disaster.
What do you do in the evening? You've got... I've got my little sheeting over everything.
I got my little corner that I pull the plastic back and I can watch TV. That's it. It's just a mess, man. We're still we're 10 weeks into it, or it's a 10-week project and yeah. We're only 3 weeks into it. Anyway.
Why didn't you do that like when you went on vacation or summer? Do you have to be here?
You got to be here because you're making decisions on the fly a lot. Anyway.
Like what kind of decisions do you have to make?
You know, like tile and counter backsplash.
You make those or Carolyn makes
those? Hell no. No, I don't. No, I just like shake my head and go, you like that? You like that? Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Okay, I like that too. I've only stepped up during this whole project on one thing and that was it. And it was like something that I really, really, really wanted to do.
What was that?
Metal railing where the stairs are.
Going upstairs?
Yeah, have you been in there? You see, we blew out that wall. People don't want to know about
No,
my
I do.
Remote.
Why do you want the metal railing? What's just,
I like the metal railing.
Just the look?
Yeah, I like the look.
You feel like you'll need it to get up the stairs in the future?
No. The only thing is, have you seen the commercial for the thing that you get on the chair
and then it goes
to get up? Pretty soon I'm
going
to need that, man. No, I don't know. I like the whole metal stairs kind of look. And that was it. You know, everything else is the wife. Anyway, I want to mention this. Dude, the amount of feedback that we have been getting lately, and I want to make sure everybody knows, the social media feedback on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all that, that is Matthew, because I don't mess with that, right? I don't do social media. I've said that for a zillion years on that show, but what I do is I answer...
What you what?
What I do. There's a soundbite for you.
Yeah,
when
so
you send me,
on my part.
When you send me an email... Or when you send a message through the website, I read every single one of those and I really try to respond to as many as I can. Mm-hmm. And over the last couple of weeks, dude, we have gotten bombarded.
I have the Bass Talk Live Facebook page. I do the feedback on that. And then my personal Instagram, which is just at Matt Pangrack. Get a lot of guys who ask questions or who bring up great points. And I try to, so there's like a little feature in there and it's like, you can see all your messages, but if you're not like friends with them, it says like you have two requests in the corner. And sometimes I like miss that. So I'm not like ignoring. Like I remember one time I didn't realize like, what is all this? It was like 15 messages. Yeah. So I'm on top of it now.
All right. There you have it. So greatly, greatly appreciate all the feedback. And some very opinionated people, Matthew, which is good. I like it.
A very educated fan base.
Yes. 100%.
That listens to Bass Talk Live. On both sides of the fence.
Yeah.
Primarily skewing towards fans of the Elite Series. Would you not say, though, Mark?
Yeah, we mentioned that yesterday.
The majority of the emails that we get are...
Yeah.
Pro Bass?
Yeah.
FLW.
I got to mention
I just find that interesting.
Dude, there was a message on the YouTube page, or not a message, but a comment from Scott Strong, who watches the show every day.
Yeah.
And he's pretty pissed off at me. And he's mad at me because I call it the game.
The game has changed.
Look, man, it's semantics. All right? Is it a sport? Is it a game? You can make an argument for both.
You can also
baseball
make an
game,
for competitive
basketball
activity.
Game, you know, golf game. How's your golf game, Matthew? See what I'm saying? It's just, is golf a sport? Yes, it is.
Yes.
Right? I don't think, maybe years ago I said that fishing wasn't a sport, but I think I've turned that corner many, many years ago that I believe.
The most common topic in a fishing podcast is whether fishing is a sport.
I know. Is bowling a sport?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Scott, please, dude, I really, really appreciate you watching the show and being a fan. But
Scott will give it to you,
dude,
man.
He said he wasn't going to watch anymore if I kept calling it a game.
You got no wiggle room with Scott, Mark. I mean, he's on you. And
He is. So, is it a sport? Yes. Is it a game? Yes. I kind of interchange the terms
So you do things.
Yeah. I've changed my mind.
We're not getting into this. We're getting into Jamie Harp.
No. But I just wanted to mention, Scott, that, hey, man, I hear your comments. I understand what you're saying. But, yes, it is a sport. But if I say game, I'm not saying that it's not a sport.
You want to just lose our viewers? I'll refer to it as a derby. You refer to it as a game. We'll have
like
seven
either,
listeners by the end
like
of the show.
Either. Not at all. They don't like that either. All right. Last night, dude, you saw it on the way in here. I didn't even realize it.
Here we go.
There's 90,000 people.
Been a full week.
In the Oklahoma City
and
area.
Not a mention of the weather.
But 90,000 people. No power here in the Oklahoma City area.
With Mark Jeffries.
We had sustained winds of 80 miles an hour last night for about almost an hour.
Up next, weather on the sevens.
I could be a weather guy. I love the weather guys, man. They rock.
You don't. You have a voice that, when excited, brings anxiety to those hearing it. And I feel like during a tornado warning, if you interrupted The Bachelor with your excited voice, people would be petrified that the world is coming to an end. You have to have a calm, measured voice. You know, folks, time to get to your safe spot. You'd be like, it's hailing crazy
out there. Highest paid weather people in the nation are here in Oklahoma.
Yep.
They make some bank. Anyway, good show today. We're going to have Jamie on. And I did not realize, third year? Is that right, Matthew? His third year on the Elite Series? I know last year was, you know, he had the medical red shirt. That's
yeah, and then the first
it?
Year he had six top 12s.
Yeah. The dude's almost banked $500,000 already. Now, when you have two wins, obviously that's going to help the cause. But when you go back and you look at his stats, and I was looking at his finish, he got off to a rough start. He really did. I mean, he had two 50-place finishes to kick off the season. And then all of a sudden, dude, he got it dialed in.
I mean, you look at it, a top 30 finish is nothing to sneeze at, and he's got 20 top 30 finishes in 35 tournaments and 11 top 10 finishes in 35 tournaments. So one out of every three tournaments he's fishing in the top 10.
Yeah.
And if you look at the dollars per derby, with almost 458,000 over 458,000 in 35 tournaments, he is on pace up there. Now, granted, the sample size is not as large as it is with some of the other anglers.
Yeah.
And then the stats are skewed with the lower field and at least getting a $2,500 check here. But yeah, I mean, you look at his last few tournaments, 100,000, 10,000, 100,000, 16,000, 7,500, 15,000. And he's had 8th, 23rd, 15th, 1st, 20th, and 1st. So regaining that stride that he kind of became known for when he jumped onto the Elite Series in 2017 by nearly winning the first one he ever fished on Lake Cherokee to kick off the 2017 season. Remember, in the first three tournaments he fished on the Elite Series, he had a second and a third.
His most impressive stat, yes, he's got the two wins, to me, is the fact that he's fished 35 events and he's went to the bank 27 times. That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Now, he's going to the bank every time just because Bass is doing this weird,
But that's
us
only
your money,
two
then
events.
We'll give it back to you.
That's only two events this year, though.
I know.
That's taken place. So forget about that. Dude, it's an incredible stat. And so many people,
why do they,
you know,
do
really
that?
Believe he's the real deal.
What's like, why do they do, like, okay, do everybody gets paid $2,500. Why don't they just cut the entry fee $2,500?
Call it a rebate.
Everyone?
It's that feel-good rebate. When you buy something and you get a rebate, don't you feel kind of good?
So what, they get that money and then they get to accrue interest on it before they give it back to them? Is that how that, I mean, like, what's the whole point of that?
That's smart business.
That would be like you being like, hey, Matt, it's going to cost you $500 a show to do Bass Talk Live. You give me $500 when you come in, and then at the end of the show, I'm going to pay you $500.
That's all right, man.
Is that not the same thing?
I mean, it
kind of
is. Yeah, it kind of. Yeah, you know, but they get the money up front. Then you get that feel good of, knowing that you're going to get a check.
It's basically forced savings. They're basically saying, you give us your money now, and then we'll guarantee that you won't run out because you'll have $2,500 to get to the next one.
Do you think those guys that just stink it up, though, feel good because they know that they're getting $2,500 back?
Oh, absolutely.
It's like, oh, man, dude, I finished in, you know, 69th, but yeah, I got $2,500
coming. $2,500. That's like winning a BFL. And if you paid it all up front at the beginning of the year, that money, you know, that's how money's already spent.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we're jumping up on September here pretty quick, and I'm curious to see what the announcement is going to be on the sustainability of what they're doing over on the Elite Series for 2020. When are they going to come out and make the announcement? Hey, guys, everything's the same, man. Just stamp it, ditto, let's move on, let's continue doing what we're doing. Hopefully that will happen. We shall see, Matthew. What do you read?
Oh, I'm just seeing how much the last place guy has made with the checks back, which is David Fritz. If he hangs on with the Elite Series a couple more years, he'll hit $1 million with Bass just with his $2,500 back every tournament.
Hey, he
had a good derby. Did he not? Now I've said it twice. Yeah. He had a good tournament.
Yeah.
At Cayuga. He played the game well. Finished 33rd.
We're just pissing everybody off. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with Jamie Hartman here on a Tuesday. Everybody, stay tuned.
Sleek new design with easy control file. The clearest images underwater with uncompromising range. Live mapping from the touchscreen. View notifications, video, even Google Maps on screen. And for the first time ever, real-time view of fish movements with Live Sight Sonar. HDS Live. New from Lowrance.
Gamagot's the G Finesse Series. In my opinion, the G-Finesse series is the only lineup of hooks you need for any fishing you do.
But I know a lot of guys haven't used this hook yet.
G-Finesse series has the nano coat on the hooks. The nano coating makes the hooks sharper, smoother, for a better hookup ratio.
20% stronger than black nickel. Wow, that is incredible. That's a lot of strength.
My Gamakatsu G-Finesse series, perfect finesse fishing for you.
Check out the G-Finesse series of hooks by Gamagatsu.
The heart of the Basscat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast-off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Basscat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Basscat. Feel the rush.
Guys, Gerald Swindle, Sunline Pro Staff. If you're a flipper, a slack line hook setter, you're really putting a lot of impact into your hook set, look for the shooter. It comes off the smooth, really smooth. Like when you're flipping, it is smooth. If you're going to be drop shotting and cranking, sniper's the deal, man. It seems like it's a little bit less likely, like on a sharp hook set, it doesn't seem like it likes it as much. But for coming off the spool on spinning rod, leaders, cranking, like if I'm going to throw a big plug at Gunnersville, I've still got strong, strong tensile strength that's not going to give out on me, but yet the line's thin enough for it to get down. So to me, shooter takes a hook set, snipers for everything else. So if you're going to slack line them, go shooter.
The name SPRO says it all. SPRO stands for sports professionals. When you look at the pro staff that SPRO has brought on board over the past 15 years, it's been pretty incredible. I mean, one got it just then. From the development of the Rock Crawler to the McStick, from the Fat Papa to the Little John series, when you tie a SPRO bait on, you know it's been designed by a professional to get the job done.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
At Duckett Fishing, we have assembled the top pros in the country to help us design rods to give you a competitive advantage.
Castability, strength, durability, action, sensitivity, weight and balance, and consistency.
Combine that with the best warranty in the industry, and you have rods that are pro-driven.
Duckett Fishing, pro-driven.
AFCO has a new foul weather rain suit called the Hydronaut. A lot of the features that I really like about it first is the speed vent hood. If it's raining out, you know, how a person gets wet is when you run down the lake and the hood comes down. With the speed vent hood, it's gonna stay up. It has a camera mount in the pocket on the chest. The Hydronaut has a two-layer, 100% waterproof nylon shell. If you're interested in a rain suit that has a lot of cool features that's gonna keep you dry, you need to check out the Hydronaut from AFCO.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole down.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water, day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
All right, we are back on a Tuesday. Great week this week. We continue Champions Week this week. And just in case you missed the beginning of the show, we're going to have Edwin Evers on next Tuesday. Talk about everything that he has going on with his magnificent season over on the BPT. And I'm trying to...
What was more impressive to you, and I meant to ask you this yesterday, yeah. Edwin's 29-pound bag on the final day of the Classic to come from 12th to win, yeah, or his final day of the BPT championship?
That is no comparison. The Classic. 100%. Man, I'm all tangled up here, dude.
You would think that... I wish they would make a little thing like there was a cord that zipped to where you could like take excess cordage and kind of wrap it up in a neat... They could call it a zip cord.
I think they make that. It's called Velcro. Anyway, all right, I'm unwound here. All right, it is time to go to our special guest today. He is on the Sunline Hotline.
For the second time in a month, yeah, talking about a win.
Yeah. Hey, if he keeps winning, he can come on every day.
A little different way that he won this time, though.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's bring him in. Jamie, you there, man?
Yes, sir. I sure am.
All right, you can come on anytime you want as long as you keep winning, man.
That's cool with me. No problem here.
Mark's two favorite type of guys to interview, the guys who win all the time and the guys who never win.
That's a good point. I like to hear what both of them have to say.
Egler X, why are you still doing this game? You haven't won since 74.
Hey, man, people want to know. Are you not curious? I mean, would you not want to know why somebody sucks?
The guys who win, the guys who never win, and Miles Berghoff. That's pretty much BTL in a nutshell right there.
That's not true. All right, Jamie, how crazy has it been, say, the last 48 hours?
It's right back to being as crazy as it was in Gunnersville, after Gunnersville, if not more. It's I'm trying to catch up to it as quickly as possible this time, so I don't let things get far behind. And I'm trying to get a grasp on it, but I've got plenty of shows and interviews lined up to keep me busy for a while.
Okay, take us through it. As a fan who wins, who doesn't know what happens, okay, you go out there, you bust the bag, you beat Gussie, you win, you jump into the crowd, you got the trophy there, you got the check, then you do your interviews, the stage gets broken down, you're done signing autographs, it's you standing there at the trophy, you go out, you do your photo shoot, and then it's just you and the trophy and the check. So what is it like that first 8, 12, 24 hours after, you know, the initial hubbub, just kind of, everyone says, oh, it's so busy, it's crazy, but like, step by step, what is it like the day after you win?
Well, I mean, the day after that evening, you know, everybody was expecting me to celebrate and go out and have a good time and you know, have a bunch of people around me. And I honestly just wanted to chill. I was exhausted from the highs, the lows, the long weeks. And, you know, it was like I really just wanted a moment to myself this time to enjoy it. My phone was on the cahoots anyways, and I said, this is cool. This is all right. I'm putting my phone down. I'm going to relax where I'm staying and just kick back, you know, put my feet up, kick back a little bit, and just reminisce. And it was quite enjoyable. And I knew what I had in store for me, you know, when I opened my phone back up, for sure. And it was nothing short of, holy cow, I've got a lot of work to do now. And it's 300-plus text messages, you know.
Wow.
Social media stuff is crazy to try to catch up to. And the amount of shows and interviews, and it's just countless, the stuff that's coming in. So now it's back to business already. And that's what we're doing now, is just catching up on all that stuff and knocking them down as they come.
Okay, just for comparison then. Let's say Lake Lanier, 57th place finish. Suckfest for you, based on what you're used to. How many calls, text messages do you get after day two of that?
Maybe 5 or 6 support messages.
I just curious.
You don't get the same amount for support messages as you get the congratulation ones. So
yeah. Well, let's do this. I want to get into a little bit of, you know, the stuff that you did on the water during this event. And one of the things that I was reading, I was really compelled, and I want you to talk a little bit about the decision to leave the docks and go back to doing what you were doing. What was the thought process on that, and why did you do that, Jamie?
Well, it was kind of a crazy last-minute decision to get out of there anyways. I knew it would take me at least 15 to 20 minutes to get where I wanted to go because all the pleasure boaters that were out there, giant waves, you know, you gotta watch when you're running with those things around. And so I, you know, it got dead for me for so long in that one area, because it was absolutely like glass, slick calm. They called for some 5 to 10 winds, east, southeast, never seen them. And I was just thinking, something was telling me, and I told my cameraman, I have a feeling I slipped. I have a feeling I slipped behind. I think I need another fish. I need to upgrade at least a pound and a half. And, you know, he can't say anything to me, and he never did. It's just a gut feeling that we get. You know, I figured other guys were struggling. It's a weird feeling, guys. I can't even explain it as a fisherman, but you get it. And with those conditions, it just told me, fish are going to go to the docks. I think they're going to go to the docks, you know. And I had some in practice that had some fish on them. And I had a couple key docks in mind, and I said, that's it, I'm going. If I go now, I'll have time. And I broke off on a pickerel on my drop shot, and I said, now's the time. And I threw the rod down, strapped it, and took off. And I went down there, and I banged out probably at least 15 docks and said, well, this ain't happening. But what happened was, I was halfway down there, and the wind, I saw the ripple on the water about halfway down. And the clouds, I seen the clouds. And I said, I almost turned back around, and I didn't. I said, no, I'm almost here. Let me go. And I did the deal. It did not work. The clouds came right back in, and I said, I've got to get at least 20 minutes of fishing back up there. And I just flew all the way back up as fast as I possibly could. Dropped the trolling motor, and I was just yiping up a storm to myself, saying, you stupid idiot, you should never have left. You should never have left. And these are the conditions you were waiting for. And about the fourth cast is when I loaded up with that 4-pounder. And that was the one that sealed the deal. So it was just crazy how it all worked out.
And you had a feeling when you landed that one that it would potentially be the fish that gave you the W?
You never know. You just don't know at all. But it just, I had that gut feeling again, you know, like I needed that upgrade to take the potential of having, you know, a 20-pound bag or 21-pound bag to a 22-something and giving me a shot at least. You know, I figured he needed 15 if I had 21. He needed 16-something if I had 22-something. And that was in the back of my mind. And he was going downhill with his weights. And I said, well, 16 ain't that hard, you know? And God, dog, I just thought I needed that fish so bad. And I did. And the crazy thing about it was, y'all know what happened at Gunnersville with that last fish I caught in the last, you know, half an hour or whatever it was. That fish weighed exactly 4.29 in Gunnersville. This fish I caught in the last 15 minutes weighed exactly 4.29.
Wow.
Each fish was the same weight that put me into the winner's circle.
Wow. That is quite the coincidence there. All right, Matt, I have one more question, and then you can ask away. Can you talk a little bit about the crankbait? I know it's a crankbait that's not being made anymore, according to some of your comments. Can you talk a little bit about it? What was so special about it?
I was able to make it silent, and I think that had a lot to do with it, especially when there was not a lot of wind. Huh. And it is what I ran into on the day before and yesterday, and, you know, whenever it was Sunday. And it just seemed to make a difference. And I had practiced with that crankbait before that when I've been up in New York for quite a while now. And I practiced at a different lake that I love to go to and just catch them at. And you can catch them all different ways there. And that was a crankbait that I kind of fell in love with. I liked the feel of it. And the depth that I was going to be fishing at Cayuga is the depth that I tried to stay in with that crankbait over there. And it just seemed to have a right feel to it. And they were choking it, you know, at this other lake too. And I just got real comfortable with it. And I said, I can make this work, you know. And that's what I did. It was, I could make it go deep if I wanted to with a long cast. And I could shorten my cast up and just, you know, if I didn't have a lot of grass, or if I had some grass, I would shorten the cast up and make it tick the top. If it was a little bit less grass, I'd make a long bomb cast and let it go down there and tick the top of the grass that was just off the bottom. I got real comfortable with it.
Is there any possibility they might, whoever the manufacturer is, maybe remake it? Or is it a custom-made crankbait? What's the scoop on that?
No, it will not come back into production, I don't think, at all.
Okay.
No.
It sounds like the Wiggle Worm, but it's not. Every time we always hear about that. Yeah. So tinkering wise, are you talking about like where you drill the hole in it, you put the epoxy in there, or you put the foam in there to keep it from rattling, you epoxy it back over, you spend 4 hours on this thing and hope it runs straight? I mean, is that the type of stuff we're talking about? I mean, that's no secret. There's a bunch of guys who do that. I mean, they used to do that with the Strike Kings before Kevin was just like, hey, how about we just make one without the rattles?
Yeah.
No, I'll let y'all do your own research on that. I did not customize it.
Okay.
But it's a crankbait that you can make it silent or you can make it rattle. How about that? We'll put your brain to work.
Is it designed that way or is it like a design flaw?
It is designed that way.
A crankbait? Okay. Yep. I'll have to do some research. All
right. And then I'm telling you, If anything contributed the most to that whole win was swapping them hooks out to the owner Stinger treble hooks, the short shanks. Oh my goodness, what a difference it made! I've never lost a fish all week long.
Wow!
On a drop shot or the crankbait, I've never lost one of them.
Maybe this is just me, but it seemed, you know, like David Mullins was cranking, a couple of the other guys were cranking. I think I saw a couple of your fish. It seemed like a lot of those fish had the back treble hook, like they just had the back treble hook. Is that?
Yeah, well, you see that a lot. I mean, you know, when they're, I don't think they were in super feed mode. if they were, I would never have had to leave my first starting area on day one, as I think they was loaded in there, but it was just being real stubborn and things just got tough. The weather changed, you know, it really did start getting cold at night real quick. And I think it just messed them up a little bit, but, you'll see that a lot when they're nipping at it. I had some of the other ones get both front and back, you know, or they'll have both and one will be towards the side of his, you know, cheek or something, and it'll be moving around, you know, fighting around and boom, it pops out. But I never lost that one hook that was in his, you know, it'd always be that back hook that's just barely into his jaw or his lip or wherever it might be. It just never come out. So, yeah they nip at it, but when they nip at it with them owner hooks on there, it's a done deal. Like, they can't get off there.
One more thing about something that I witnessed, and I mean, you got to let me know. Did you feel like pretty much the ultimate badass after the scenario where you were throwing the crankbait, you were talking with Sanders and Davey Height, talking about how you needed a 5-pounder, and then you put it down, you pick up the drop shot, and you go, like this one right here, and then catch the 5.5. I mean, dude, I'm sitting there watching it going, that had to feel awesome to friggin' catch that on command.
Oh, man, that's the first, actually, I've heard of it. I know it happened, and I know I did it on Skype, but nobody's mentioned it to me yet until just then. But yeah, it was pretty wild. I just set the other rod down, grabbed the drop shot, and pitched it out there, and it loaded up for me, and it was at 5.5. So yeah, it was pretty awesome. Like, just to make that quick second, you know, split second decision and throw the drop shot out there in 13 feet of water in the middle of nowhere and catch a 5.5.
I was bummed out because the most overused fish catch landing celebration is the quote, "That's what I'm talking about." And literally no one is ever talking about it. No one is ever talking about it when it happens. You were actually talking about it, Jamie. This was the one time that you could have thrown out a "That's what I'm talking about," and it would have been completely 100% acceptable.
You are correct, but I don't think, unless I really slip up, you will never hear that out of my mouth, man. If you do, you are allowed to slap me. You are correct. It is the most overused phrase on a fish catch, and nobody's ever talking about it. So,
while we're at it, we'll just go with everything I witnessed, and we'll get back to you in the instant feedback. The celebration, though, the double underhanded fist pump to the front of the stage ranks up there with Mr. Olympia when Dean Rojas beat Swindle by an ounce on Toledo Bend back in 2012. Yeah. I mean, it brought back shades, and it was, I mean, the cliche two hands over the head. I mean, you went with the full double fist pump.
I don't even remember, bro.
You went like underhanded. It was like down on the one knee.
Top five selling.
It was good.
Yeah.
Really? I do not remember. I blanked out at that time. All I knew was the scale had to say 16 something, and it popped up at 15 something, and I just kind of blanked out.
That's awesome. Hey, how far south were you?
Mid-Lake.
Mid-Lake, okay. So there's, I mean, you weren't far enough south to where you could look up at the hill and see Cornell University, were you?
Cornell University? I don't know. I don't believe so.
Okay.
No, right. I think that's way down, isn't it?
It's way down there.
No, it was not. No, okay. It was Mid-Lake.
All right. On the instant feedback, Mike in New York wants to know. It says, ask him if the owner's short chain hooks are two times.
2X. 2X.
Yeah, 2X. Yeah.
I don't think they say 2X on them. They're a very stout hook, though. Well, I mean, I was throwing a number. What was I throwing? A number one. I'd have to look again which one I put on that crankbait. But they're a pretty stout hook. The only time I bent one up was trying to wrangle it out of a pickerel. And then I instantly just swapped it out. But, man, they don't bend. I don't ever roll the tips on them. So they're pretty stout hook. I'd have to look again. I don't think it says 2X strong on it.
Okay. Mike also wants to know, how much did your electronics come into play in this event?
Huge. In practice, that's how I ended up finding that one area, was by that, with my Lowrances. And I got where I could distinguish what grass was what just off of my graph. And it was mostly, it's the down scan part of it that really pops, makes it pop out. So you can find the grass as you go with your 2D and your side scan, but to truly know, you know, what you're looking at is the down scan part of it. And you can see the stems of the grass and get a general idea whether it's string grass or it's coontail or milfoil. Coontail and milfoil will kind of show up, you know, the same. It'll be a thicker image as opposed to the real stringy stuff would be your cabbage grass or the string grass is what we call it. And it's just a really, really dense, thin string grass. It's pretty tough stuff. That's the crappy stuff. You don't want to be around that stuff. And yeah, with the Lowrances, I've spent some time in the seat, moving around trying to find that good stuff. And, you know, that's how I ultimately came across that deal.
All right, Jamie, I was in New York for a week not too long ago, and it was before the St. Lawrence River. I actually ran into you on Oneida Lake, and there was a situation that took place. It was kind of funny because the guy that I was with, one of the fans, we were out there fishing, and we were headed to a spot. And he goes, well, there goes Jamie. Jamie's going to the spot that we were going to fish. So I sent Jamie a text. I go, I come all the way from Oklahoma to fish Oneida Lake, and you take the only spot that there's fish on. And he got a chuckle out of that. You know, and then he ended up leaving, and then he ends up telling me, oh, I didn't catch anything on that spot. Anyway, there was an event that took place while we were on that water.
He lied to you.
Where you actually, yeah, he probably caught 30 pounds on there. Anyway.
Did you hear the chuckle when you said he said he did it? Jamie went,
yeah. There was a situation where we were way, way, way on the west end, and we turn and look back, and there is just this massive plume of smoke. And Jamie was actually involved in saving lives. He's cashing checks, winning trophies, and saving lives. Talk a little bit about that, Jamie.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's kind of one of those deals of right spot at right time. And I had just drove through there heading east, and I probably got a mile and a half away from there. I sat down, and I was probably, I don't know, four or five casts into it, and just kind of look back over the shoulder a little bit, and there's this black, like, stream of smoke just pouring into the air, and it looked like it was a long ways away, but I said to myself real quick, I said, I just drove through there. I said, oh, my God, and I had two guys on the boat, and I said, strap the rods down. Let's go. And, man, I spun back around, and as I just got up on plane, and I was hauling over there, and it just clicked. You know, you just drove through here. That boat just caught on fire or blew up or whatever happened. And then I got to thinking, like, please, please, just be in the water. Who's ever in that boat, just be in the water. Do not be on that boat. Because as I got closer, I could see it was fully engulfed in flames. And I got around the backside of the boat, and there's two people in the water, thank God. And it was the only two people that were in the boat. And a jet ski had just gotten there, and the guy was kind of panicking a little bit, and he was trying to climb into the jet ski. He ripped his cord off and broke his ignition. And so now we have a jet ski dead in the water with two people on it, a guy panicking. His life jacket was barely on. His wife was probably 20 yards away from him. And I dropped the trolling motor, and I went over and pulled her up off the top of the, you know, or off the back of the boat, put her inside, and then spun back around and talked him off the back of the jet ski to come around the back of the motor. And I pulled him up inside, and then took them. Another boat had finally showed up, grabbed the jet ski and pulled him way off to the side so he wasn't by the burning boat. And I took the other two about a good mile away from the boat because he said it had a full fuel tank. And I was just worried about it blowing up.
Oh,
so
yeah.
We sat there and
I waited for the fire department boats to get there, and they took care of the boat first, and then they came over and got the people off of my boat.
Yeah, the thing ended up sinking, didn't it?
It did, yeah, because they could not put the fire out. So
he's going to win the Open.
There was
that.
Three of them there spraying on it, and it wouldn't go out, and it ended up sinking.
There you have it, new structure. That's right, there.
Are you fishing the Open in a week or two there, Jamie?
Yeah, I am.
Jamie's going to win off of the sunken boat that he saved the people's lives off of.
Jeez.
That's karma, right?
Yeah. Hey, I'm curious, Jamie, that time that you, obviously you spent a lot of time on Oneida Lake, but staying dialed in and working on some of the stuff that you might have been working on during that time prior to the SLR and Cayuga, did that time on Oneida Lake help you out?
No, not really. No, not at all.
He just blew
it's a
that
totally
theory.
Different fishery. No, it's a totally different fishery for sure.
Does that even matter? I mean, I hear guys talk about, and guys have said on this show before, that it doesn't matter what body of water you're on. I need time on the water to stay dialed in. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. You just keep your skills. You hone your skills, you know. And I constantly do that. And I've got another lake that I love to go to around here, and that's the one, you know, it was a grass lake, and that's where I went to kind of get myself dialed in for Cayuga. And that's exactly what I did. That's why I went there. But it doesn't fish like Oneida Lake does. So.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was referring to. I wasn't saying, okay, I got to go to Oneida to get dialed in for those two bodies of water. I was just talking about remaining dialed in during the time that you had off.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think that's very important.
Are you fishing
without
the
a doubt.
Coast on Thousand Islands?
No. I got to head to Oklahoma.
Oh, okay. Because I was thinking, dude, you look at your history with what you've done. I was joking, you know, before saying, oh, you're going to win three in a row after after Gunnersville. But, I mean, in all reality, you win Gunnersville. Let's be honest. You've never seen it before. You're a confident guy, but I'm guessing you didn't plan on going in there and winning. You know, that was crazy. But then you look at that schedule with the St. Lawrence River, Cayuga Lake, and then the Open on Oneida coming off of the win on Gunnersville. And you had to just be like, dude, this is a dream scenario for the month of August.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with the schedule for sure. I mean, definitely excited to be up here to, you know, do these two lakes that were Thousand Islands, and right after that was Cayuga Lake. So, yeah, I was definitely looking forward to it. I'm not going to lie about that. But, you know, it's fishing, and anything can happen, and I wasn't overly confident. I still have to put in my work. You know, and you still got to catch them, and all them other guys can catch them. And you've seen that. I mean, both places, everybody caught them. You just got to do it just a little bit better.
What are your thoughts on Fort Gibson?
I really am still up in the air about the place. I don't really know what to expect. I know it's going to be tough. I'm expecting very tough conditions. So I'm thinking, you know, if I could catch 10 pounds, I think that's going to be a pretty good bag there. It'll go a long ways. So you got to just prepare yourself for a low-weight tournament. And I think, weather pending, that's the way it's going to go. I could be wrong, but I don't think I will be.
49 points behind Scott Canterbury for the Angler of the Year. You still got a shot at this thing?
No, I don't think so. No, he's. I mean, there's a couple guys that may have, but you never know. Fort Gibson, he might spin out. You just don't know. But I've got a lot of good guys in front of me still that are thinking the same thing, you know. So I'll take it as it comes. I have to, you know, when I started this deal, it's like I said, you know, when I started it, I have to put up the numbers. Let it fall where it may, but I have to put up the numbers. So if you don't catch the fish and put the numbers on the board, you're going to fall way behind, regardless of how anybody else does. And I always say that. I don't care how they do. I still have to put them up there and then let the numbers fall where they will.
Yeah.
If you don't catch them, you go to the bottom. That's plain and simple, you know?
Yep. All right, my last question.
If I go to...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No.
That's two shows in a row, Mark.
I know.
If I go to Fort Gibson, I got to catch them. I got to catch five a day. That's it. And let it fall where it will.
All right, man, my last question. What are your thoughts being from New York? The week that I spent in New York, what are your thoughts about the fans across the country? Not necessarily, obviously, in New York, but the fans across the country in Texas, California, Oklahoma, Missouri. Do you really think that people know how great that the state of New York is when it comes to bass fishing?
A lot of them people that I run into down there have never fished in New York, so they only hear about it, but they all say, God, I can't wait to get up there. I've got to get up there one of these days. So they kind of know just from watching and seeing the videos and the shows and stuff, but they have never experienced it to see how cool it really is.
It's an unbelievable.
Everybody does get a chance at it.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable place, and I've said on this show numerous times. It's one of those areas that if you bass fish, be it for the green ones or the brown ones, it doesn't matter. You have to spend some time in New York, and there's a zillion lakes up there that can make for a trip of a lifetime.
Yep, absolutely. There's many of them.
All right, Matthew. Anything else?
Yeah, you ever fish for yellow perch up there?
Only when I'm drop shotting for smallmouth and I catch them.
Like, you never like go with the minnow or the jig with crawler, get you a big mess of yellow perch, scale them out, fry them up?
No, I don't. I catch them in between. I catch a walleye in the fall, and those big perch eat it too. So we keep them sometimes in the fall, but that's about it.
It's disappointing.
I love eating them, but I hate cleaning them.
So the last time I was at Cayuga was when they had announced the schedule the next year, and they'd had a tournament on the St. Lawrence, so they knew that Cayuga was coming up that same week the next year. And I went out with Cliff Crochet. He's like, oh, you want to jump in the boat and check out Cayuga? I said, yeah. Well, I did a little research, and I realized that he had a K2 cooler sponsor at the time. I realized there's a bunch of jumbo perch in there. So here's Cliff, you know, 65-pound test, braid, frogs, punching. I'm drop shotting a night crawler, just filling a cooler full of yellow perch. Like, limited out. So about 2 hours in, Cliff's like, yo, you got any more of them worms? So here we are out on a grass edge on Cayuga, drop shot yellow perch. And it was one of the greatest days I'd had on the water.
Wow. Only the Cajun baby. Jeez. All right, Jamie, we're gonna let you go. Look forward to seeing you at Fort Gibson. Right. But just, man, outstanding effort this season and two blue trophies, and wish you nothing but the best at Gibson, man.
All right. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, man. Take care.
All right. You too.
All right. Bye. See you. There you have it. Jamie Horton.
Also known as Jamie Hartman.
Jamie Hartman. Jeez.
JB Horton is... currently painting his face crimson for the Alabama opener.
Yeah, that's true. Football is
probably
upon
getting
us,
the
man.
Tailgate necessities.
I can't believe I
in
did
order.
That. Maybe I can.
Well, at least you
I
said
can't recover from that.
At least you
Jeez.
Said. At least you said someone else who's in the industry. At least you said another bass fisherman.
Good point. Hey, by no and means am I
kind
perfect.
Of, they're both kind of matter of fact, kind of understated, going about their business.
Yeah. Dude, he's a freaking stick.
Jamie Hartman.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jamie
really
Horton
is.
Could catch him, too. Saw what he did on Grand there with that spinnerbait back in April.
Well, you know.
No,
when
it's...
When you do what we do, you're
going to
make
mistakes.
It's
a matter-of-fact thing, and it's one of the cool perks of this job is talking to these guys who are on a roll. And you can tell... Do you not feel like when we interview guys, you can tell guys who are trying to talk themselves out of it and convince themselves that they're going to catch fish, and guys who are in the midst of one of those roles? There's just a different,
I think so.
Different yeah. level of confidence.
And that's part of the reason why I like talking to the guys that don't catch them.
Yeah, no, 100%. I was giving you a hard time, but yeah. it's very educational.
Yeah.
Very
you learn from people's mistakes, and that's part of the beauty of guys spilling the beans on what they did wrong.
Mm-hmm. And when oftentimes a lot of those guys who are in the middle, they make it so simple.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, he's like, well, you got to go out and catch your five. You just go out and catch him. Now, what we really didn't kind of expand on is, and if you read the article that Bassmaster put out on the final day and what Jamie mm-hmm. said during that interview, here's what I got. He made it sound pretty simple. Did he not? I went, they weren't doing the one thing. I went back, I got what I needed. I knew the ripple was there.
But hang on a second. Before you go on, do you think he kind of was second guessing himself until he got that bite?
No. Here's
okay,
here's
tell
why.
Me why.
He had to make 7, 8, 9 decisions on that final day. Now, you might look at it and think, oh, he went and he flipped those 15 docks and it wasn't yeah. happening. That was yeah. a wrong decision. But he realized it was a wrong decision, and then he knew what he had to do with the bait in the area. What he's talking about is making multiple key decisions in the closing hours of a $100,000 Elite Series tournament that came natural to him, saying, I knew I needed to go back because of that ripple on the water. I knew I needed this bait. I knew what I needed to do. I checked this. This wasn't working. I checked this. This wasn't working. I saw those conditions. I made the adjustments, and then it was easy. But what your one wrong decision, not following yeah. your gut, maybe saying, I ran all the way down here. I'm going to stick with these docks. I know it. Maybe yeah. not going down to the docks and then not fishing the grass with confidence with the crankbait because you're afraid that dock bite's going on.
Yeah.
He glossed over the fact that he made 5 or 6 crucial, critical decisions in the closing minutes that seemed easy to him, but were all very impressive moves.
Okay, let me ask you this. When you have tasted victory, when you, it doesn't matter what you're doing, fishing, golf, bowling, tennis, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter, your decision making process seems to be more fine-tuned and confident in your decision making because you have tasted victory. All right,
100%.
It's a confidence thing. Because think about this, think if you step up to the tee box on 18, you've never won a golf tournament before. You think the nerves are going to be a little
because
bit more?
Because you have
more?
Nothing to go back and rely
what,
on.
What club do I select? Do I, you know, it's a tight fairway. Do I try and just play it conservative and try to go right down the middle? Or do I keep doing what I've been doing the entire round, which is absolutely destroying the driver?
And now that you have, okay, I am a perfect example of this, Mark.
Okay.
Me, personally, fishing the Costas this year. I fished the Opens in 2015. I had good day ones in all of the Central Opens in 2015, and yeah. I fell apart on every single day, too.
Yeah.
First Costa of this year, 2 fish on day one, zeroed on day two at Amistad. So now I'm 0 for 4. I go into Kentucky Lake, and I catch 1 fish on the first day to put me in 85th. You know what is vividly going through my head that entire night?
Yeah, you're riding the suck bus.
No. Here's what's going through my head.
Whoa, back up. Dude, you're telling me that you weren't second guessing all the decisions and why you were doing because of the lack of success that you've had?
Will you let me finish the story? Okay. Is what I'm saying.
All right. I'm sorry.
I get off the water and I call Dave Rush and I go, I am screwed because I have had no success in multiple day tournaments backing up a poor day one with a stellar day two.
Yeah.
I have 4 failures, which I know is not a big sample size, but I can't look back and say, oh, but remember that time when yeah. I caught. I went out on Kentucky Lake. I caught 12 pounds, 4 fish on day two,
mm-hmm.
jumped 70 points in the standings. Then I go right to Table Rock. Disastrous first day, 10 pounds, 99th. I go, hell, I'll just do what I did on Kentucky Lake because now I've done it. Now I've jumped from 100th place to cash a check. Guess what I do?
Good point.
I go out, I catch 15 pounds, I jump up and cash a check. Then I go to Rayburn and I catch him on day one, but now I've got confidence. Dude, yeah. I freaking jam him on day two. Look at the decisions that I make on day two and I catch him on day two. That's strictly a result of the this recent success that I've had, and it's the same way with a win. And you talk to those guys, what Micah Frazier said, I didn't know if I'd win again.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys, after their first win, you see a lot of that explosion. You know, look at a Chris Lane or something, or a Mike McClellan or something like that. They win every year for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
Then something happens where they don't win year, and then they kind of have to rebuild that. That's what's so impressive about a Thrift or a Van
Dude,
Dam.
You're dead
never on. Loses it.
You're dead on. And the confidence that you have now is you're oozing with confidence.
But whether it's whether I just got lucky 3 days or whether I actually have the confidence.
You still have confidence,
right,
though.
Because I can look back on it and say, it has happened. Here are some of the things that I did that allowed that to happen. I didn't spin out. I made micro adjustments instead of macro adjustments. I let it happen. I didn't try to force it.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You spent some time with him. What's Mike McClellan's confidence like? I didn't mean to stump you, man.
He's got a...
Is he second guessing in any way?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But that's human nature. Anybody would second guess because of the level of angler that he is. He
Back
is a
up.
Top tier angler.
Exactly. Back up, though, because he has multiple blue trophies, though, he's able to fight through it.
That's what I'm
better
saying. There's a difference between having a lack of confidence and refinding your confidence.
Okay.
That confidence is still there. He just has to harness it. Big difference between that and someone who's never been to the level that he has been.
Great point. All right, let me ask you this. Do you think that there are guys across the country, maybe even some of the people that are listening to this show, that have the resources, that have the work ethic, that have the knowledge, that have everything that you need to be successful fishing BFLs and Costas and Opens and whatever, but can't surpass that threshold because they haven't tasted success yet?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think there's some guys that struggle with their self-confidence when they get to a certain level.
They may go out and they may win the fruit jar tournament on a Thursday night, but when they get to the next level, they can't perform.
Yeah, so this is a weird deal for me because I interned for you in college in 2007, right?
Yeah.
So I've been in this industry for so long, so I've never had the... Oh my God, I'm fishing an open against Mike McClellan moment. Now, do I feel confident I can beat him? No. Do I respect everything he's done? Yes. Is it intimidating to the point where I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can catch him with these guys in the field? No. Because, I mean, I've been in the boat with him during practice and stuff. I know how these guys operate. Yeah. Sometimes they catch fish, sometimes they don't. But yeah, I mean, I think there's guys who are intimidated on the stage. There's a lot of guys, I think, who are afraid of failure. Whether that be because they can't afford the failure financially, because they don't want, they feel like their reputation go down, so they don't ever try it. Now, I think there's also a lot of guys who use extreme self-confidence to their advantage. I think there's guys who put extra fish in the boat because they literally feel like they're the best angler that's going down that stretch that day.
Is there a difference between ego and confidence?
100%.
Okay. I agree.
Like, and I don't know this guy very well at all. I've like just kind of been around him, but like Todd Castledine, confident, like super, super confident.
Yeah.
Like when he goes out, like just from what I imagine, like he's like really confident, like really, really confident. But I don't take that as cockiness. Some people take that as cockiness, but like I want to get to his level of I'm going to wreck him today.
Yeah,
because I'm not at that level. I mean, I can be like, yeah, I think I'm going to catch some fish. If you watch my AFCO bass boot camps, I was like, oh my God, the plan just went accordingly.
Yeah.
I'm like celebrating that it went according to plan. Like Castledine, I would imagine, just from my mental image of how he fishes and what I've watched and what I've talked about him, like goes out and is shocked when it doesn't go according to plan. Like that's a big gap that you have to close.
Yeah,
when you're pumped that it went according to plan and he's shocked that it didn't go according to plan, you're not going to beat that guy very often.
Yeah, the first couple of guys that I can remember that I ever saw that, and not on a national tour, but just from a regional level and a local level, and some of the people in the Ozark area might recognize this name. I don't know if you know him. Jimmy and Jackie Davis.
I know the name.
All right. Every time they showed up, dude, it didn't matter if it was a BFL. It didn't matter if it was a Central Pro-Am. It didn't matter if it was an open on one of the Ozark lakes. They expected to win. It was cock. It wasn't... It was confidence at the level of expectation to where everybody knew that if Jimmy and Jackie Davis was in this event, oh, we're fishing for second.
Yeah.
That is kind of the status that people thought of every time they showed up. Nicest guys in the world. It wasn't cockiness. It wasn't ego. It was, holy crap, these dudes are freaking badasses when it comes to the Ozark Lakes.
And here's the deal. Like, here's how to gauge to tell whether you're a badass or not. So, like, when you're in one of these tournaments and you're catching them, I guarantee you, Todd Castledine, James Biggs, Marcus Sikora, we'll just kind of do that low, aren't sitting there going, I wonder what X angler has if I've got this much weight. They're going, wonder how big my lead's going to be. That whole group is, I remember sitting it. I sit there, I flip up a 5-pounder, and I turn to my co-angler at Rayburn, and I go, but if I'm catching these, Castledine's catching sixes. That's a different level.
No, I'm with you, man. I really believe that there are guys out there that they're sticks, but they can't overcome what it takes mentally and confidence-wise to be able to perform at the level that you need to be at to be successful. Winning the Tuesday night Fruit Jar Jackpot tournament is great, but when you go to that next level and then you continue not to have success, your confidence is destroyed. And some guys just cannot overcome that, like what you did, though. They just can't. And then they end up going back to the Fruit Jar tournament and, you know, they've spent what money that they've saved up to do that. It would be a very intriguing story to see who some of these guys are across the country. Mm-hmm. Guys that were just absolutely dominating in their areas, but just could not make it at the next level. To see whether or not it was a mental thing, not a game thing.
I mean, Jamie said it. You catch fish, it takes care of itself.
You're right.
I mean, it doesn't matter what the sponsors are, what the level is, who you're competing against. You go out and catch 5 good ones, it takes care of itself. You succeed at any level. Then you win tournaments.
Yeah.
You make money.
Confidence is a great, great thing, man. It really is.
I talk about it in rodeo. You want to get out of a slump, stay on the damn bull for 8 seconds a couple times in a row.
Don't
knock a barrel over.
You're right.
You want to, faster than everyone else on the racetrack. That takes care of a lot of problems.
No, you're right, man.
It boosts confidence.
You're right. You're right. All right, man. Great show today. I want to thank Jamie Hartman. See, I got it right that time.
It was a slip. I mean, it obviously you knew his name was Jamie Hartman. Yeah. You've had the guy on 2 months. You watched him save people's lives on the water. He's basically a national
treasure.
Just a
slip, man. I got it right. All right. Jamie, thanks for taking time out. Very, very busy schedule. Tomorrow, Scott Canterbury, your current Elite Series Angler of the Year. He's going to be on live via Skype. That's what we're planning on right now. And then next week, Edwin Evers and Boyd Duckett, and then we're doing a show on Thursday next week. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week. Don't forget, everybody, make sure you review us on iTunes. Give us a rating. It helps us out a whole bunch.
If you watch on YouTube, click the little bell next to the screen. That will alert you every time a fresh new episode of BTL is uploaded.
Keep the comments coming. We love the comments. Try to answer as many as we can. And folks, greatly, greatly appreciate all the people listening to us every single day. That's it. We're out of here.